Philippians chapter 1, and we'll take our first pass through verses 21 to 24. We're going to look at that and talk about what it means to live as Christ. And then next week, Lord willing, we'll look at what does it mean to die is gain. And before we get started, while you're turning there, I just wanted to ask you if you see a, you don't know, you know, where you're going in Chicago, something like that. Maybe you would like to purchase coverage so that, you know, if the car is damaged, then, you know, you're taken care of. So that all those things are extras. The reason that you come to our counter is to rent a car. You don't come to our counter to rent a baby seat. You know, you would just go to, you know, Walmart or Target or something and buy one of those if you need it, right? You come in to rent a car. And so all of those other things are extras. They're not the reason you're there. I think a lot of us treat Jesus as if he were merely an extra in our lives. You know, he's there to help us when we need. He's there to provide for us. He is there to provide salvation, heaven. He protects us when we need. But he's really only an extra. That wasn't Paul's perspective. It shouldn't be our perspective either. But what was Paul's perspective? Well, in another passage, he says, in Colossians 3, verse 4, Christ who is our life. Christ is our life. And, you know, that, on the one hand, strikes us as a little vague. How do you define that? But really, when you dig into these passages like the Colossians 3 passage or even the one we're going to look at today, there's a lot going on there. And so Paul speaks in these kind of concise, pithy, easy to remember type aphorisms to so that we would have something to remember and to hold on to and then to meditate on. To chew on those during the week and as we think about, okay, what does it mean for Christ to be my life? Christ is our life if we are a believer in Jesus Christ. He's not some extra to our life. You know, we tend to make some other thing the main thing. In reality, I hope we get this today, that everything else, no matter how worthy, how wonderful, how necessary, everything else is an extra. Jesus is the main thing. But we will take one of those extras or more and make them into the main thing. It might be marriage. It might be singleness. It might be work. It might be retirement. It might be family, hobby, self-pursuit, pleasure pursuit, whatever it might be. We turn those into the main thing and then relegate Jesus to being like the baby seat, an extra. But, you know, when you're traveling with a child, you need a baby seat. So, okay, I get myself in a tough situation, I need Jesus. Most of the time I don't, but occasionally I do. That's the kind of thinking that we have. We don't say that out loud. And if I were to come up to you after church and ask you, is that the way you think? You'd probably say no. You know, I wouldn't want to admit it either. Right? You know, but it's true. You know, and I talked about renting a car. All of those things that are extras, the baby seat, the GPS, the coverage, they're all related to the car. When you show up at our counter, it's not about the GPS unit. You're there for the car. And you might need some of those extra things, but that's not why you're there. That's not the main thing. All of those are about the car. In our industry lingo, we refer to them as either incremental or ancillary. They're something extra that goes with the main thing. And so... in a much more profound way, everything in your life is an extra. And all of those extras are about Jesus. In fact, Jesus is the one who gives them meaning and purpose. You know, you may wonder, okay, you know, why do I slog through my work, whether you're working in the home or outside the home, and you're day after day, you know, sometimes it seems rather meaningless. And especially, you know, if you're not in a full-time, you know, ministry type job, what's this about? Am I making any difference and things like that? What gives them meaning, what gives them purpose, the whole reason for them is Jesus. They exist, they happen with Jesus in mind. They exist to bring glory to Jesus. Your job is about Jesus. Your education is about Jesus. Your marriage is about Jesus. Your singleness is about Jesus. Your family, it's about Jesus. Even your hobbies, every pursuit, all of those are about Jesus. And we should be able to say with Paul that Christ is my life. So here we come across Paul in Philippians 1. He finally makes it to Rome, not under the circumstances he was really hoping. You know, you can bet, right? Like, yeah, I hope I get, you know, put in chains and, you know, drug halfway across the Roman Empire to get to Rome finally and then be locked up there in house arrest. No, he didn't expect to get there that way. And when he got there, he didn't expect to be, you know, chained to guards. And he's waiting for his trial before Caesar. And it appears from reading this that when he wrote Philippians that he probably has a reason to think that his trial is near. And that makes him think, you know, if my trial is near, then the verdict may not be that far off. And the verdict may be that I'm executed. I'm found guilty and executed. And so he also thinks, but I might be set free. I might be found innocent and they just let me go. And so he's spending time here pondering on paper or maybe papyrus. He's pondering these two possibilities. Life and death. And as we have already seen, both of them bring him joy. You think about it. He served Christ a long time. Been through a lot with the Lord. And he's ready to go home. It's like, I look forward to being with the Lord. And so when he thinks about my trial may be near, and the verdict may be not too far after that, and I may be executed, and he's like, and I'll be with Jesus. What a wonderful thought. And to him, it's exciting to think that I may be there in heaven with Jesus forever. Not just like the glimpse he had gotten at one point. And he's like, but you know, I don't know that for sure. I might actually get stuck here longer. But he didn't look at it that way. He's like, life? That's awesome. Death? That's even better. He's looking at both of these options, and it's not like, you know, one of them is a bad option, one of them is a good option, or vice versa. He's okay with, you know, he's more than okay with going home, and he's okay with staying. Why? Well, because Christ gives meaning and purpose to every part of the believer's life. Christ gives meaning and purpose to every part of the believer's life. Actually, to the whole of the believer's life. So much so that we should say with Paul, Christ is my life. To me, to live is Christ. We should ask, along with this mindset of Paul's, we should ask some defining questions if we think in these terms. whenever you go through something in life, in this kind of a new episode in life, a new trial, a new blessing, whatever's coming along in your life, you ought to ask these defining questions. If Christ is your life, you would ask, what does this have to do with Christ? That ought to be one of the first things that we ask instead of, Lord, why are you letting this happen to me? Why? We ought to ask, okay, Lord, what does this have to do with Christ? I'm not sure right now. Sometimes it's not easy, you just off first blush to know. And you have to think about it. Sometimes it's obvious. We should ask, how should living for Christ change how I handle this? That's an important one. Blessings and trials. If Christ is my life, then how should that change the way I handle this? How should I glorify Christ in this? Why might God have ordained this for me? How is this an opportunity to reveal Christ in my life? How can I show to the world by the way I respond to this that Christ is my life? To me, to live as Christ. So what can we do to see that Christ becomes, or if he is now, and I think he is for some of you, he remains the center of our life. How do we do that? Well, we can learn from Paul's example here, as we have been. Very rich section of Paul just sharing with us his heart about prayer, his circumstances, and the blessings that have come through the trials in his circumstances, many trials from chains and difficult people. And so he's sharing his heart. Now he's pondering life and death. And we're learning more from that, or we will learn some more from that. And so we can glean from his example four ways that help us see life through Christ. Four ways that help us see life through Christ. So as we saw last time, and he ended that section that began, you remember in verse 18 at the end, he has two mentions of rejoicing. And the first one is present tense. He's saying, okay, in all of these things that are going on, Christ is being proclaimed by some good guys and some not very nice guys, but he's being proclaimed. And he says, and in this I do rejoice, present tense. And then right after that, he gives a future tense. He says, yes, and I shall rejoice. And let me tell you why. And so we started looking at that last time, where he's talking about what are these things that bring him joy as he ponders both life and death. And so now we continue in that. And he picks up at the end, verse 20, whether by life or by death. I'm going to have joy in this. I'm going to have confidence that the Lord is going to be glorified. So either way, if I'm found guilty and executed, and some of those guys are probably saying stuff like, well, Paul's in prison for a reason, and is there some sin he's been hiding? And remember, he saw his situation similar to that of Job. And Paul's like, no, Christ is going to be glorified even if that happens. And if I'm set free, Christ is going to be glorified if that happens. So he's confident that Christ is going to be glorified. He's confident that he will rejoice in these things. And so as he says, whether it's by life or by death, into verse 20. And so he says, okay, I want to spend a little more time on this. I want to think about this. And I'm kind of pondering it out, writing it out. And I want to share this with you all. And his mindset is that, either way we go, I win. That's, to live as Christ and to die as gain. A beautiful statement. To live as Christ and to die as gain. Good and better. It's not, bad option and a good option. No, it's a good option and a better option. And so he wants to explain that kind of thinking because he wants us to learn from his example. As he's going to say twice later in the letter, I want you guys to practice the things you've seen in me. I want you to learn from my example. Do like what I do. And so he's saying, okay, I want you to learn to think the way I think and see that no matter what happens here, I win. And in reality, Jesus wins because he's going to get all the glory. But for me, it's great either way. And as I said, this week we'll look, as we go through verses 21 to 24, we're going to look just at the phrases about to what it means to live as Christ. And then I wanted to take a little bit extra time because I didn't want to all get kind of lost in and try to cram it into to one sermon. You're welcome. I talk fast enough as it is, you know. We'll look at what it means for to die as gain, so that we have a perspective on heaven, the right perspective. And what is it? What is heaven? And I want you to start kind of chewing on that for next time, thinking about it. I'll give you a hint. In verse 23, the simplest definition of heaven is to be with Christ. And think about that. Okay, first, organize your life around Christ. This is what Paul has done. He doesn't tell us to do that here, but he tells us to follow his example. This is what he has done and does. Organize your life around Christ, verse 21. He says, "For to me, to live is Christ." To live as Christ summed up the meaning of his life. This is what it's about. This is my life. It's Christ. There's only one main thing for Paul. And he made sure that the extras stayed in their place as extras. They were not necessary. Only Christ was necessary. Everything else exists for the main thing. If you ask Paul, okay, for you, what is life? He would say, Christ. Why do you do what you do? Guess what he would say? Christ. What goal do you shoot for in life? Christ. What drives you? Christ. Why do you exist? You know, people, you know, philosophers throughout the ages, you know, why are we here? And, you know, and he would have the same answer. Christ. Well, that's Paul. Do you really think that Jesus expects that of us? I mean, he was an apostle, you know, as a special category. You know, he was a missionary and, you know, and he lived in the first century and, you know, things have changed. Does Jesus expect that of us? Is that, yeah, he does. Luke 9:23, Jesus said to anybody who wants to be his disciple, he says, if anyone, not just apostles, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily. I think taking up your cross is hard. Do it daily and follow me. By denying yourself, it means that you no longer call the shots or plan out your life. Now, I don't mean you don't plan for your vacation and you don't plan for your retirement. I'm not talking about that. The plans aren't yours. Whatever plans you make, they're made with the mindset, okay, Jesus, you know, how do I plan this so that it glorifies you, so that it meets your, you know, what you want in my life? You don't just have yourself in mind. You don't have just your family in mind. Your goals and your aspirations, they're not yours anymore. If you've come to Christ, you're his disciple, and if you're his disciple, you're the things that, your desires, all those things, they're not yours anymore. You willingly submit them and surrender them to Christ. And this is something that's really important for us. Because you think about how, you know, what dreams of ours don't come true. I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, sometimes some things happen the way they're supposed to. Not very often. You know, our world is so broken and we're all so broken and we're, even though we're in the process of being, you know, renewed, we're still sinners. Things don't happen the way they're supposed to. And so we have to surrender our desires and plans and everything to him. Because even when you make good, godly plans, sometimes God says, yeah, I'm going a different direction. I'm taking you in a different direction. And we have to surrender those plans to him. In other words, in a sense, we hold them loosely. Like, okay, you know, if I'm the head of my household, I, you know, we work together, we plan these things. And But God may say, okay, good plan, but that's not where we're going. We're going to change things. Okay, and so you recognize that it's about Him, not me. Taking up your cross every day means that you die to yourself every day. You die to your own desires. You die to your own agendas. Because Jesus sometimes changes them. You know, okay, change the plan. Not that His plan changed, but for us, what we thought was the plan changes. You know, I always like the way Jim Bloomstrand refers to it. He says, okay, well, this didn't work out, so we'll switch to God's plan A. You know, and that's the right way to think about it, right? We try to look at it as plan B, and God didn't, it's not, no, I already had that planned out. It's just I didn't share all of it with you yet. We have to die to those. Why do we have to die to them every day? Well, every day we get up and, and we're ready to be king again, And hey, it's about me. It's about my desires and my aspirations. And this is what I'm going to do today. And forgetting that Jesus is the king, and He may say, no, we're going to do something else. I've got a different track for you to follow now. We so easily go back on our commitment, so we need to die to ourselves every day. And then following Jesus means that He now defines your life. He's the purpose of your life. He gives meaning to your life. Every part of your life is organized around Him now. You order your life so that every piece of life is like, okay, if Jesus is right here, you order every piece of life around Him so that it's all facing Him. And it's, okay, where do we go, Jesus? And what is, what's the point of this? It's for Jesus. And if He takes it away, it's for Jesus. If He adds something else in there, that's for Him. It's about Him. Every part of your life is organized around Him. You know, if He died for you, and if you're a believer, He did. He died for you. If He died for you, you owe Him everything. You owe Him your entire life and every piece of your life. No matter what it is, every plan, every desire, every part of your agenda, all of that belongs to Him now. And so we have to learn to think in new ways. I like the way that commentator John Eadie sums this up as he comments on, or he kind of pulls it all together, the way he understands this phrase, for to me to live is Christ. The preaching of Christ, the business of my life, and here he's kind of talking from Paul, the presence of Christ, the cheer of my life. The image of Christ, the crown of my life. The Spirit of Christ, the life of my life. The love of Christ, the power of my life. The will of Christ, the law of my life. And the glory of Christ, the end of my life. Like what my whole life's aiming toward. And he goes on. He says Christ was the absorbing element in Paul's life. If he traveled, it was on Christ's errand. So wherever he went, why are you going there, Paul? Well, Christ wants me to. He's sending me there. Remember, he used a term we saw earlier that he said that the people who loved him and were preaching Christ out of love for Paul, he says that, they know why I'm here. Basically, that I'm stationed here. Just like a soldier is stationed to this particular post. My post is here, right between two soldiers in chains. And I'm stationed here. And he understood that. So if he traveled, it was on Christ's errand. If he suffered, it was in Christ's service. When he spoke, his theme was Christ. And when he wrote, and we're seeing this, aren't we? Christ filled his letters. And that mindset ought to describe you and me. And if it doesn't, we need to work hard on that. That we can say truly, Christ is my life. Now, he's going to say some more about this to kind of help us understand just what this is going to look like, at least for him. And then we can glean some lessons from that. So we said first, organize your life around Christ. And now second, cultivate fruit in the days you have here. Cultivate fruit in the days you have here. Verse 22, he says, But if I am to live on in the flesh, this will mean fruitful labor for me, and I do not know which to choose. So here he's just describing another way of if I live, go on living, if I'm set free, and if I'm, you know, set free from prison and I get to continue living. And flesh here doesn't have the usual overtones of, you know, the sinful aspects of, you know, our leftover effects of our old man, our old nature. He's not talking about flesh in that way. He's just talking about our creatureliness, our bodily existence, you know, our physical existence is all he's really meaning here. And so what he's doing is elaborating on what to live is Christ, what that looks like for him personally. And he says that it will mean fruitful labor for me. And keep in mind that what he's dealing with is that there's that moment of excitement when he's thinking, I might be with Jesus before very long. And he loves Christ and he's pursued Christ all his life, served him all his life. He can't wait for this. But then there's that thought of, you know, but I might be left here for a while longer. And it delays that joy and excitement of actually seeing Jesus face to face and being with him forever. You know, I've told this before, forgive me. A number of years ago, I was at the doctor's office, you know where I'm going, and they were taking blood. I wasn't giving it. It was like, you know, no, you know, I don't give blood. And the dear lady, you know, the nurse, I don't know if she was new or what. She was having a lot of trouble, and which meant I was having a lot of trouble. And, you know, I'll spare you the gory details, but she was trying, and then it wasn't working. And she's like, oh, I messed that one up. I'm going to have to go get another one. And I'm like, oh, you know, this is already painful enough. And, you know, and so she leaves, and I'm feeling pretty woozy. And I've got this condition where the doctor told me afterwards, like, okay, things like that happen. You know, your blood pressure drops, your heart stops, and, you know, well, that's what happened. You know, and so I wake up on the exam table there, and, you know, I'm like, okay, and surrounded by a doctor and nurses and everything. And he explains what happened, you know, and it's all surreal. You know, you're just like, what, you know. Because, I mean, I wasn't there for most of this. You know, he's pounding on my chest. And I wasn't even there for that. I realized it afterward, you know, because like, oh, my chest hurts later in the day. I'm like, why? Oh, yeah, I had a doctor just thumping on it. So, but as I was laying there on the table, and, you know, and they're all kind of watching, you know, because my blood pressure was zero there for a bit. You know, I didn't know that, I mean, I didn't think about that being possible, but I guess, you know, your heart stops. And I thought, oh, man, I was this close to being with Jesus. Really? You could have just let me go, you know, and I, it, yeah. Of course, Connie was mad at me. She's still mad at me for thinking that. But it was a tiny little taste of what Paul had there. You know, you and I, you know, if we go somewhere, you know, help out one of our missionaries or something, and they lock us up for preaching Christ, and then the reality that we might get executed, you know, I don't know that our first thought is, I get to be with Jesus here pretty soon. Wow, this is great. I hope they chop my head off, you know. We're, you know, more, you know, kind of terrified, you know. But Paul had that. It's like, wow. And then reality hit him. It's like, but you know, it might not happen that way. As excited as I got there for a minute, I might have to stay here and be apart from Christ, if you will. I mean, not, you know, with him personally forever and ever. And so he says, but you know, that's not so bad, because it'll mean fruitful labor for me. And you get to see how important that is to him. As wonderful as it is, you know, to go and be with Christ, he's like, yeah, but if I stay, it's fruitful labor. You know, so that's a good thing too. And so he submits himself to God's plan to go on serving the church. And fruit is the result of his labor, so he calls it fruitful labor. Living on in this life meant continued opportunities for Paul. Opportunities for him to do what God put him to do, put him here to do, to serve his master. He viewed these opportunities as fruit to be harvested. That's a good point for us to take away. Whatever comes your way has been ordained by your Father's good hand and by the Lord, the head of the church's plan. And we should see them as opportunities and then see those opportunities as fruit to be harvested. That'll change the way we think about stuff, won't it? You know, when all of these, you know, unpleasant things come in our life, and we tell ourselves first, okay, this is opportunity. And second, it's an opportunity for fruit to be harvested. It might be leading someone to Christ. It might be having a godly testimony. There's helping the church, build the church, all kinds of opportunities that it might be. And so as Paul's pondering both of these, he's like, I don't know which one to choose. And, you know, it's like, okay, you know, going to be with Christ, that's the best. But this is a good option, too. And he's like, you know, which one for me right now is going to be better? And it's like fruitful labor it almost compares with being with Christ. It's that important and that valuable to him because it's a part of, I mean, it's Christ. To live as Christ. And of course, you know, Paul didn't get to make the choice. He's talking about his preference here. And I kind of wonder if he may be thinking in terms of, okay, you know, which one, you know, should I be praying for? I mean, he may probably pray for them both, but how should I pray? You know, if I'm getting ready to die, then his prayer is going to be, okay, Lord, help me remain faithful and have a godly testimony all the way to the end. Or if he's thinking that I'm going to get turned loose, okay, Lord, prepare the churches for me, prepare me to get to them and to serve them and to use my gifts for them, you see. So that may be what he has in mind, is why he's, you know, which one here. He may prefer one over the other, but he submits both of them to God. And now third. Explore the value of two excellent options. Verse 23, explore the value of two, and it can be more, but two excellent options. And we'll just take the first part of verse 23 here. After saying, you know, he doesn't know which to choose, but I am hard pressed from both directions. And he's not so much, okay, living or dying. Those are not the options he's thinking about. The options are, staying here and serving Christ, you know, fruitful labor or being with Christ. And those are his two options, fruitful labor or being with Christ. It's not really living and dying per se. And, you know, this idea of exploring the value of two excellent options, Paul had already done that, and he's doing that again here. So he has it in his head that there's good and there's better. They're both excellent options. This is a key to contentment. And that's one of the things that Paul is teaching us throughout the book of Philippians. And you'll get to a kind of a high point in chapter 4 where he's said he's learned the secret of contentment. And this is part of it. It's looking at, if God has you somewhere where it looks like there's two possibilities that may happen, to learn to look at both of them and explore, okay, so what is it in both of those that God may be planning to, what is he planning to do? Why might he have me go this way? Might he have me go this way? So that whichever way you go, you're already prepared to say, okay, good and better. or good and good, rather than, you know, how we typically do. We look at, oh my, you know, this one's bad, and okay, this would be good. And instead look at, okay, you know, yeah, unpleasant, bad from a human perspective, but what is it that God might be doing through this one? And that way, you'll be more likely to be content with what the Lord ordains. So both of these are excellent options. And it's okay to prefer one, but you have to submit that to the Lord. You know, it's not a matter of, okay, I'm going to pray for the good one, you know, the best one even, and I'm going to submit that to the Lord. Lord, you know, whichever one you have for me. He says he's hard-pressed. It's like being pressed in from both sides. He's, you know, we might say today that he's torn in two about these. And why is he torn? Well, he sees himself as so close to receiving the prize. It is to be with Jesus forever. So close to that, he can almost taste it. But he could become very disappointed in, but it might be delayed. And instead, that he's like, no, good and better. Both of them are extremely important to him. Both are excellent options. And we need to learn to see how God can be glorified in either one. So whatever, if you find yourself like that, it's like it could go this way and it could go this way. Look at how might God be glorified in either one so that you're ready for whichever he assigns for you. And now fourth, be encouraged. Heaven delayed is opportunity to serve. Heaven delayed is opportunity to serve. Verse 24. Yet to remain on in the flesh is more necessary for your sake. And so he's kind of gone from in his thinking, you know, it could go either way, and I really like this idea of going to be with Jesus, but as I kind of think it through, I'm realizing that there's still a lot of need here that God has prepared me for, and so I'm probably going to stay a while. So heaven delayed his opportunity to serve. So he's becoming convinced that he probably won't be executed. Why not? Well, the only reason is, he says, it's more necessary for your sakes. That's why. You guys need me still. God plans to use me for you still. This isn't serving others versus to live as Christ, because serving others is part of to live as Christ. When our service is part of to live as Christ. See, so he doesn't see an either or. Serving him is Christ. I'm serving Christ, I'm serving his church. That's to live as Christ. Now, his dilemma, you know, is really hypothetical. I mean, he doesn't get to choose. And he knows that God has stationed him in Rome, in chains, to testify the gospel. But it looks like God's going to set him loose pretty soon and make his way to Philippi so he can continue serving them because they need it. And we each have different amounts of time left on this earth. None of us knows how long that is. Maybe you're just starting out. You know, maybe you're a young person, or maybe you just came to Christ and you've got your whole life ahead of you, we say, right? Well, I challenge you to do what Paul did, what Jesus calls every one of us to do, and to devote the life ahead of you to following Christ and to order every part of your life around him. So that he is the center that everything revolves around. It's all about him. And so it doesn't matter what part of your life you want to think about, whether abstract or concrete things, doesn't matter. They all are about Jesus, or they should be. And so if you're just starting out, if you will, and you got your whole life ahead of you, devote it to Him and order it around Him. Now, maybe like Paul, you've served the Lord for many years. And like Paul, you're ready to go home. Do the remaining years belong to Christ? And that's the challenge to those of us in that category. Do those remaining years belong to Him? Now, you know, those service in those years is going to look different than it did when we were, you know, at the beginning. But they still belong to Him. What's your primary passion in life? Is it Christ? What defines your life? Is it Christ? What gives meaning to everything you do? Is it Christ? What's the purpose for everything you do? Is it Christ? Something we do every week that really is intended to remind us, to help us reorder the mess that we made all week and to get it reordered around Jesus, the one who gave Himself for us. We come to the Lord's table, and we have it weekly because, for us anyway, we think that it's something very helpful we need to reorder our life every Lord's Day around the Lord, so that the Lord's Day becomes the Lord's week, that we can say throughout the week to live as Christ. And it should be a time where we examine ourselves. And so when you think in terms of, Paul did this in 1 Corinthians 11. He calls us to examine ourselves, to examine our life. The Lord's table is a regular opportunity to examine your thinking. You know, do you order your life around Christ? And if there's sin in your life, the thing that's happening is that you have not been ordering your life around Christ. You've been ordering it around yourself. And that's where sin comes from. You're doing your thing, or somebody else is not doing your thing. And so we need to examine ourselves. Is the crucified Savior, the risen Lord, the center of your life? The Corinthians got themselves in a mess. And Paul has to admonish them. He says, whoever eats the bread and drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. And he exhorts them, but let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. So it's not, okay, something going on, will you refrain? No, he says, examine yourself, deal with it, and then you partake. For he who eats and drinks judgment to himself, if he does not judge the body rightly. For this reason, many among you are weak and sick, and a number sleep. But if we judged ourselves rightly, we should not be judged. And he talks about being disciplined by the Lord. So the time at the Lord's table is a time for us to get our eyes back on Christ, to order every part of our life around Christ, the Savior who was crucified for us, and who is now the risen Lord. He's the King. He's the Lord. He's the Master. It's all about Him, and it's all for Him. And think on these things as we have our time now around the Lord's table.